This is the Stick and Hack Show. Conversation, discussion, debate, and golf talk from a stick, Mike Ryan, and the hack, Adam Grubb. Boys, you are up.
All right, welcome in, everybody. It is the Stick and Hack Show. I'm your host, Adam Grubb, the hack. It's Mike Ryan, the stick right there. Mike, how are you?
I am fantastic.
You know, I'll tell you what, today is a big day. We have a live studio audience for the very first time in the Stick and Hack Show.
Look at that. Fantastic.
That's not pumped in, I promise you that. And that will be the last time you hear from him for this show, we hope.
Yeah.
We have an incredible program on tap today. It is guest today is Tom Meeks. He is the USGA Rules and Competition Director with almost 40 years experience on the program today, and we cannot wait to talk to him.
Retired.
Well, he's retired.
Yeah, you didn't mention that.
Okay, well, I apologize. Mistake one.
We
want
to be accurate on the
okay.
Show.
Okay, since when?
I know, never. But whatever.
All right, so retired. I do apologize. Mr. Meeks will be on the show here in just a second. Show brought to you by Bombas Socks. Go to bombas.com and check out their performance golf socks. And finally, be comfortable for all 18 holes. They are a member perks partner. You can join the member perks program by going to stickandhack.com, becoming a member today, and save money instantly on Bombas Socks. We appreciate their sponsorship here of the program. Mike, first up, let's talk about doing it their way, okay? Yep. And you'll get a sense here pretty soon how this show kind of ties together for the first time ever, ties together in those that have done it their own way. And Mr. Yep. Meeks is one of those, and he's going to be talking about his career here in just a bit. But first, 1968 Olympics, Richard Douglas Fosbury would win the gold medal in the high jump and become one of the most influential athletes in the history of track and field. What does he have to do with golf, you say? Well, he figured.
I have no idea.
Right, we're going to get there. So just hang tight. Hang in there. Besides winning a gold medal, Dick Fosbury revolutionized the high jump event with a back-first technique, now known as the Fosbury flop. The flop is adopted by almost all high jumpers today, and most Olympic medalists in the events from 1972 through today have used the flop to go on to win their gold medal. Dick Fosbury's flop challenged conventional thinking. And there's somebody recently in golf who's challenged conventional thinking.
Yep.
Who would that be, Mike?
Bryson.
Yeah, Bryson DeChambeau.
Yeah.
And he's come out as this savant in certain ways, and this the scientist, and this very unique swing plane and how he addresses the ball and all that. Guess what?
Yep.
He copied it. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Guys?
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, thank you. No reaction.
I know.
Why do we even have a studio audience?
Because nobody, they don't care.
Meet Mo Norman, an obscure and possibly autistic genius golfer from Canada. Like Fosbury's unconventional style, his golf swing techniques were considered and often ridiculed and considered extremely strange. Yet his record tells Fosbury's like story, winning 55 tournaments in Canada and one time holding 41 course records in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Mo Norman changed the golf swing for a lot of different people, including your boy Bryson DeChambeau. Reclusive and shy, Mo Norman avoided the spotlight, never becoming a household name. But the professionals who played with Mo regarded him as one of the greatest ball strikers to ever play the game. Even Ben Hogan, one of the golf's greatest ball strikers, who rarely would watch other players, was known to watch Mo hit balls and marvel at his ability. Just like Dick Fosbury, is it coincidence that Mo's swing just happened to be one of the most consistent and accurate golf swings of all time? To understand Mo's swing and how it simplifies the striking of a golf ball, you must understand the basic principles of the conventional and traditional golf swing, which I don't.
We know that, Adam.
The most important objective of the golf swing is to produce speed and consistency, achieve the moment of strike at impact. So he came at it and he said, okay, I'm just going to change the way I stand near the ball. I'm going to change my address. I'm not going to bend my knees. I'm not going to hang my arms below my shoulders. I'm going to straighten my legs, stretch my arms into a straight line with the club, and tilt his body further. Huh. Mo Norman is what does that sound like?
Sounds like
Bryson DeChambeau.
Bryson DeChambeau.
Your boy. Your boy Bryson.
He did steal it.
He did steal it. So Mo Norman is a name
he's a damn thief.
Is a name you probably haven't heard unless you have followed golf for many, many years. Mo Norman, he came to golf, and because of his attitude, he had a bit of a salty attitude on the course. he didn't really hit that next echelon in the PGA. But there is always somebody who starts something who doesn't get the credit that they deserve. And in 30 years, the golf swing has changed dramatically in a lot of different ways, but not Mo Norman style.
Yeah.
And then Bryson came in and said, hey, this is what I do now. Now, Mo Norman has, I think he died in the 2000s. I don't know. I didn't do that much research. He's probably dead. But he still has a training and teaching clinic that is world renowned for his style, and it's all about a single swing plane teaching style.
I wonder. I'd be interested to know if Bryson actually has studied him. Mm. I would bet he has.
Yes, he absolutely has. Okay. I mean, and he has gone on record.
Yeah.
So Bryson, if you're listening to this, first of all, shame on you. Second of all.
He's definitely not listening to us.
He has been on record saying that he was an influence, that Mo Norman was an influence. Now, I guess Bryson doesn't stand behind the ball as much. He stands pretty straight up. Yeah. But as far as the hands and the arms and the one swing plane, that's Mo Norman. So like Fosbury, Mo Norman was a pioneer and did it his way. And speaking of somebody else who does it their way, Mr. Tom Meeks joins us here on the Stick and Hack Show. We bring in our guest, Tom. Welcome in. Thank you so much for being here on the Stick and Hack program.
Thank you.
And you're actually here.
I know. Live.
You're here live.
We don't get this very often.
No, typically we have Zoom issues and producer Shane can't figure it out and it's a real nightmare. But luckily, you have shown up this morning, so we appreciate it very much. So your career spans nearly 35 years in the USGA and around golf. And born and raised in Illinois, you've been in golf pretty much your entire life. Tell us your quick story about how you became not just interested in golf, but how you came to the USGA and started making very key decisions for the USGA throughout the entire career.
Well, of course, my career started here in Indiana as the executive director of the Indiana Golf Association and Indiana PGA, which is now held by Mike David. I was actually the first executive director. And just happened to be in the right place at the right time to get that opportunity. And after 3.5 years and some correspondence with the USGA, P.J. Boatwright, who was the executive director at the time, he followed Joe Dye, and he contacted me about a position with the USGA. And I went and had an interview with him. And
you said yes.
Yeah.
Well, hell yes.
It's kind of funny. My wife and I went out to kind of see New Jersey and so forth, and we'd been in Indiana, you know, all of our lives.
Yeah.
And we got out there and met with Mr. Boatwright, and he finally said, well, we'd like to invite you to take this position. And I said, well, will you give me a week to think about this and talk to my wife?
Yeah.
And on my way out the door, he said, oh, by the way, if you decide to take the job, we want you to come down to Augusta to meet all the executive committee and just spend the whole week there with us. Now, that's like putting a carrot out in front of a horse, you know.
Eight seconds later, you said, yes, I don't need the week after all. Yeah,
forget the week. I'll take it.
I'm in.
I told my wife, and at the time, her parents were having some health issues, and she said, this might not be a good time to do this. And I said, you know, this is a chance to go to the big leagues, and I don't think we'll get another chance at it. So let's do it.
Well, it was a good decision. USGA Director of Rules and Competition, which sounds it sounds like a very nerdy position, but it isn't. I mean, it is so important. And when you're the Director of Rules and Competition, you are responsible for all of that for the USGA.
Well, it got a little nerdier. They put a senior in front of it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Senior director. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Yes.
So we're going to get to Shinnecock and a few other controversies surrounding the USGA and the U.S. Open with you very soon, which I know you're probably excited about. You've probably never talked about that before. But first, you once kicked Tiger Woods off of a golf course. So my question is, exactly who do you think you are, Mr. Meeks?
Well, I did take a strong staff member with me, just in case we had a situation. But actually, Tiger has a funny practice routine on Wednesday. He will go out and play 9 holes. And in this particular case, he jumped on the back 9. Yeah. Well, in those days, we were only letting all the practice rounds go off 1. And the primary reason was to let the maintenance staff get out there and do their thing.
Yeah.
Well, the maintenance staff now is on hole number 12, and here's Tiger on 10. And he's with Davis Love. Yeah. And I don't know how Davis got there, but the two of them, and I went out and I said, Tiger, I'm sorry, but you can't play back here. We got the maintenance crew. You can't hit into them because they're doing their thing.
Yeah.
And he hesitated a little bit, and then he agreed to do it. So we went in. It wasn't a kickoff. He
agreed.
That's
not what I heard. That's not what I heard.
All right. Well,
I heard you kicked him off the course, and there was and there was a big to-do.
Here's the kicker, though. Immediately, the press wants me to come down to the press room and talk about this. And I said, no way.
I think that was a good choice.
Yeah. And then 33 years later, I'm talking, or 23 years later, I'm talking about it.
Yeah. He's now having the conversation that they would have wanted to have with him at the time.
So that was 1997. So that was just kind of at the beginning of the rise of Tiger. And he has never changed his practice routine. He's never changed pretty much anything in 23 years. Would that be a different conversation today with you if you were in the same position? Or do you think it would still be the same thing? Well, you don't really care who it is, right? You have to do something.
That's right.
You're gonna take care of it, right?
Incidentally, Tiger and I are very good friends. So,
are you really?
Yes.
Yeah. No one's ever said that to me in my entire life.
Well,
I have never heard those words come out of anyone's mouth.
You don't run in Tiger's circle?
I don't run in Tiger's circle. This is the circle I run in. You.
Not much to talk about.
What a disaster. that's pretty amazing. And have you, watching him and thinking about your 30 years or so, watching him go through that from 97 until today, is there a sense of pride that you see seeing him today as he went through that entire career?
Absolutely. You know, when he first went out on the tour, and I and a lot of other people didn't like the way he acted, and his temper was terrible, his language was terrible, but he has improved, and I certainly got word to him that I was very, very pleased to see this change in his style, and it's going to be a benefit to him in the long run. Yeah. The first time he came to Crooked Stick for the Western Open, I was helping out there. I was kind of supposed to greet all the players and everything after they checked in. So I'm there, and Tiger comes up and he says, "Wait a minute, you're not setting this golf course up, are you?" I said, "Wait a minute, Tiger, let's count the championships you won while I was setting the golf course up, and I think you're going to be pretty happy."
That's quite a to be able to give that answer.
Yeah,
that's a dream.
It's quite an endorsement.
So that's an amazing story. But Tom, tell us about your career and some of the highs and lows in nearly 35 years of golf. And I know you probably got countless stories.
Well, you know, Shinnecock comes up frequently.
Yeah.
And
no way.
I can tell you that Sunday was a nightmare for me, but let's go back to Saturday, and we had a perfect golf course.
So for those of the that don't know, Tom, that was 2004 U.S. Open and at Shinnecock.
Yes,
and,
sir.
And you were responsible for the course setup, and on Sunday morning, the first two groups went through on Championship Sunday and were combined 7 or 8 over after just a couple holes. And there was some weather, some wind, some concern about the course, and you guys took it right to the edge as far as the firm and fast greens. And apparently they had been lost in the middle of the night, and it was almost seemingly impossible to putt on hole 7. And that's where the tragedy kind of started. Is that correct?
Well, let's go back to the course setup.
Yeah.
What's that mean?
Yeah.
Well, basically, besides all the preliminary work did in the days and weeks and months preceding the Open, when it actually gets there, I'm in charge of hole locations and tee markers and so forth.
Yeah.
That's my main concern. It was my number one challenge. And we had a perfect 3 days from Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. We had a perfect golf course.
Yeah.
And all I did was the same thing on Sunday, or have the maintenance crew do on Sunday that they had done the previous 3 days.
Yeah.
But the winds came up that night. You're right. The winds came up and were very, very 30 miles an hour or something like that.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Way faster than it had been as far as the wind was concerned. And you're right, on 7, which is a Redan hole at Shinnecock, the hole location I thought was all right. And by the way, I always went out when we were setting holes and putted them, make sure that they worked.
Yeah.
And I think we did do a little adjustment on 7, but not enough. And by the time the first groups got there, it was Very dicey.
Yeah, yeah.
Immediately, I got our agronomist, who's our staff agronomist, to get with the superintendent. I said, get someone out there, and every other group, let's throw some water on that green. Just a little slight syringe to try to get the grass to grow a little quicker and slow things down a little bit.
Yeah.
And that finally saved the day, but before we could do that, we had several groups go through. I think one jumps out at me is Craig Stadler's son that well, I think one person even putted it into the bunker. So it was a nightmare, and I'm sitting there watching it and just shaking my head. I said, "Oh boy, it's going to be a long day."
Right? Yeah, because they actually called you over at one point. You were on another hole setting up, and the early groups had come in, and someone on the radio said, "Tom, you're needed on hole 7," and you said, "No, thank you." Right? Is that about right?
Oh, no. No, I went immediately over there, and I could see what the problem was.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It, you know, with my job there with the USJ all those years, I learned something.
Yeah.
The only problem is I learned it in 2004. I started in 1975.
It's a slow learner.
And I told Mike Davis, who followed me.
Yeah.
I said, Mike, I learned a big lesson today, but I've only got one more year here at the USJ, and I'm retiring.
Yeah.
So please learn something.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, this past year when they went to Shinnecock, or 2 years ago,
yeah,
they had problems again. So Shinnecock is a tough setup. It's a great golf course. Yeah. I love Shinnecock.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's a tough golf course, and you've got to really be careful because the weather out there is very different and very unusual.
Yeah.
So what's surprising to me, and we've learned this over the course of just like the last couple episodes, Mike, you've got the director of grounds for the host course. You've got the PGA agronomists and those that are making sure that the course setup is fair and accurate. And then you have someone like yourself who is going out and literally putting the balls to make sure that the hole locations are fair and just and that they work. That's so many people deciding and as part of the committee to set up a golf course. It's not just some guy in the middle of the night, you know, some crazy man.
That's a good point, but let me just say this about setting holes.
Yeah.
Two is too many to do it.
Oh, two people?
Yeah.
Two is too many.
Yeah.
That's what we say here at the Stick and Act Show.
We definitely have
two is too many
for sure.
So it's
exact same thing.
It was definitely my call all the way. Every hole was my call. Now, I did take my staff with me, and we did a group decision or an evaluation of each green.
Right.
But the final call was mine. And then once you determine where you're going to set it for the 4 days of the U.S. Open, you're going to one here and on Friday, two here. You know, you're moving them around. So you've got four locations, but you're going to move them. And believe me, the hardest day, you don't have every hole the hardest on the final day.
Yeah.
We try to balance out four hard ones on the first day. Yeah. And of the four you're going to use, four of the easier ones you're going to use, and four hard ones.
Yeah.
So you also factor in front and back, left and right, bunkers. Yeah. And so there's so many things that go into it. But the bottom line when you go to U.S. Open is, number one, you want it to be hard but fair. You don't want it to be tricky.
Yeah.
And I ended up with one there and one at Olympic in 98.
Yeah,
but you take responsibility for it, and you stood up and you said, "Hey, this was my fault." But was it really? I mean, because you had wind, you had weather, you had a course, you had a lot of things that were that played against you in 12 hours of weather. How are you supposed to know?
Well, that's a good point. How are you supposed to know? I need some help from the local people to let me know, oh, this wind's coming in, and when this dries out, it speeds up. I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that. Yeah. And no one ever offered it to me, but I'm not blaming them for not doing that. I told the superintendent, he's a great guy, I said, let's just do everything the same tomorrow. Rolling, how many times, what are we going to double cut the greens, triple cut, we're going to roll them. So all those things factored in. But when that wind came up and dried that golf course out, it was fast.
Yeah.
The U.S. Open is known and for its difficulty and its toughness, and they almost wear it like a badge of honor. Do they ever maybe go over the line in your mind when it comes to the need for that course and that type of tournament to be so difficult?
I don't think they necessarily go over the line, but they certainly try to come as close as they can to it. Yeah. But that people always say, well, you guys want to see a par being the score or eight over. What? That's not true. We don't set the golf course up in any reference to score. We set it up as difficult as we can, but as fair as it can still be. I always compare it to win the U.S. Open. It's like driving and winning the 500. You got to come to the edge several times to win that race. Well, the same way with the U.S. Open, we want to come close, but we don't want to go over the line. Right. Yeah, we did there.
Yeah. You've been the centerpiece of some very strange U.S. Opens and historic discussions around course setup and others. One famously is 2004, but another one was 1999 and the year Payne Stewart won. Some great stories there of that year. Tell us a little bit about that year.
Well, you know, Payne Stewart, you never recognized him during practice rounds because he never wore the knickers and he never wore the Ben Hogan cap.
Yeah.
And you didn't even know who's that guy until he put his outfit on.
Right.
But Payne and I at Pinehurst, he came up to me, says, I don't like the way you set up 16, excuse me. And 16, for those of you who know Pinehurst number 2, is a par 5. There's a little pond down. It's the only water hazard on the golf course, a little pond down there that no one had any trouble with.
Yeah.
But Payne comes up and he says, I don't like the way you set up 16. And bear in mind that at a U.S. Open, generally the USGA will take two of the par 5s, let's assume it's a par 72 with four par 5s. They'll take two of the par 5s and make them par 4s.
Yep.
And Payne comes up to me and says, I don't like the way you set up 16. And I said, really? He says, yeah. He says, that green's not met for a long arm. We're playing it as a par 4.
Yeah.
And he said, it's not made for a par 4 shot.
Yeah.
Second shot. So I said, I'll tell you what I'll do, Payne. I'll move the tees back as far as we can, which is another 30 yards.
Yeah.
And we'll play it as a par 4 or a par 5 if you promise me that you and everybody in the field will not go for that green and 2.
How'd that go?
He looks at me, says, you're impossible, and walks away. But Tiger Woods was the same way with the second hole at when he won at Pebble Beach in 2000. He came up to me, he says, why'd you change number 2 to a par 4?
Yeah.
I said, well, let me ask you a question, Payne. Have you played any practice rounds? He says, yeah, I have. I says, well, what'd you hit for your second shot on that hole? Well, 6-iron. I says, is that a par 5 or a par 4?
You're asking me?
Tom? Yeah.
I have no idea. Well,
he has no, he doesn't know what that. He has
no clue.
Here's the real kicker. When you take 2 5s and take them down to 4s, what's that do for the whole field for the 4 days? It takes 8 shots away from them.
Yeah.
And they don't like that.
Right. Yeah. You know? For sure.
Tom Meeks is the guest, retired USGA Director of Rules and Competition on the Stick and Hack Show.
Yeah. Tom, in your career, you've had more makes than misses.
Thank you.
And yeah, that's not what some people talk about when they talk about your career.
Including us.
Including us, clearly, at this
bunch
point.
Of
but
jerks.
Does that bother you at all? Or how do you feel about that?
You know, it's if you can't stand the heat, don't go in the kitchen. Right. You know, it's that type of thing. I know when I'd start to do my job to set the golf course up and other aspects of it, I know that I'm not going to get a lot of additional Christmas cards or so yes, that, but the bottom line is, are you being fair?
Right.
And I can tell you that I know of no enemies I made during my career with the USGA, and I made a lot of friends. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, and here's a good story that deals with Tom Lehman after he was in 98 with the whole location at Olympic on Friday. I ran into him in 99 at Pinehurst, last day, Wednesday before the start of the Open the next day. And I ran into Tom Lehman and Andy Martinez, his caddy, and they're out there by themselves. And I'm making one final pass just to look at the course before I go to a meeting with all the officials.
Yeah.
And I ran into Tom and He says, I said, how you doing, Tom? He says, I'm doing well. He says, I could win this week. And I said, well, good luck to you. And I hope I don't screw up like I did last year at Olympic. And he looked at me and he said, don't be gun shy. What a great comment.
Yeah,
you know,
he's
basically saying, you do your job like you know it has to be done. Don't back off on something. You go ahead and do it. Don't be gun shy.
Yeah. I love that.
A lot of the conversation has centered around the course setup and some of those things, but there's also the rules aspect of your job and that you went through. What did that mean? What was that job specifically? And were you really the guy in charge of the rules? So whenever there's a rules infraction or a question, they get on the radio and some guy in a golf cart comes up at 100 miles an hour and pops up and looks at the thing. Are they radioing you and getting the decision from you? Or what did that look like for every tournament?
Well, first of all, we have rules officials that are very, very good and very qualified. And as rovers, now most of our rules officials at the time were either walking with a group or had a whole assignment.
Yeah.
But we also have rovers, and I'm a rover, and then we have a couple officials from the PGA Tour, Mike Shea, Slugger White,
yep.
Mark Russell. Those guys were there to help us. So, and that's nice to have them because they deal with it every week. So they're good. Then we would have some help from the PGA of America, their top rules officials, and even the RNA. But I was the one that had to be involved with the final decision. Now, bear in mind that it wasn't me alone. I've got other people that are going to be involved with any decision on something that's very, very delicate and very hard to interpret. So, awesome. Yeah, but I was there.
Now you say, as a rules expert, you've said before that despite what people think, the amount of rules in golf is really no different than the rules in other sports. They're just more specific rules. What do you mean by that? And where do you show and tell. Here we go.
First of all, on behalf of being on your show, Hack, this is for you.
Thank you very much.
I will stick. Well, there's
thank
yours.
You. Thank you.
I'll never read a page of this.
And I think I probably know most of this.
I've got good for you, Mike. We're all very impressed.
I've got some comments to make about your article. I think the one I read about Arnold and Ken Venturi.
Yeah.
You said that Arnold consulted his playing partner, Ken Venturi. Well, let me tell you something. At the Masters, those aren't partners. Okay?
I wrote that.
You with me?
Yeah, he wrote that.
Yeah, I wrote that, Tom. I don't know why you're yelling at me. I apologize.
I'll be happy to proofread any of your future stuff.
Well, you and everybody else.
Gladly. Everyone else would love that, too.
We've had a lot of people request that.
What was the question?
I have no idea, Tom. No idea. Couldn't tell you. I asked where you had said that the rules in golf are no different than rules in sports. But, I mean, just looking at this book here, I mean, 240 pages, that I don't see that many rules in the NBA or in baseball. But
have you ever seen the NBA's rule book?
No, it's a great point, Mike.
There you go.
It's a great point.
Let me tell you.
Thank you.
I was also a football official and a basketball official. And let me tell you, the rules of golf are a lot easier to understand than those rules. Yeah. Well, for example, the definition of traveling. Have you read that in the NBA rule book?
There's no definition of traveling.
They don't ever call it
28 steps.
They removed that rule.
If you don't dribble end to end of the court, that's travel. Perhaps.
Yeah. No, the rule, obviously, since I retired in 05, September 30 of 05, just 3 days ago, I celebrated my 15th anniversary of being retired.
Wow.
My God.
That's incredible.
Yeah, well, but during that period, a group of people, and it must be a large number, got together for all these rule changes that were made effective January 1 of 2019. And initially, I'm thinking, I don't believe Mr. Boatwright and Mr. Dye up there are very happy about these.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I certainly had some questions and concerns, but I will say this. After being in effect now for just under 2 years, I like most of the rule changes.
Yeah.
Now, the one that I would love to see changed, and they know how I feel about it, is I would like to see all placing instead of this dropping, because It'd be a lot quicker. Yeah. It'd be a lot simpler. And yeah. it almost got passed.
Yeah. Oh, really?
It almost got passed.
So instead of dropping it from your ankle, you can now you just place it.
You would place it, yeah.
yeah. And even that dropping rule. See, I wanted to say drop it waist high or lower. Some people, because of different problems, can't reach down to their knee to drop it. So right. I think that needs a little cleaning up. But I love the flag stick being in there.
Yeah.
I love being able to tap down on your line of putt now. I mean, that makes perfect sense.
That never made any sense to me that you couldn't clean up your deal. Hey, there is a question from the audience, and I do want to get to before we get to other things. We have the Stick and Hack Challenge today, golf tournament, and we are wanting to know, did you set up the course today for the Stick and Hack Challenge?
I was invited to, but I said, I don't, I'm done.
Yeah. Yeah. Shock of the year.
I retired.
Yeah. I'm done, he says.
That's awesome.
I will say this. If they set the whole location on 6 today, where they had it, a week ago Wednesday, look out.
Yeah.
And for our national audience, they will be very excited to hear that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
No, I sent Eddie Devlin, our great superintendent, great guy.
Absolutely. Shout outs here.
I sent him an email. I said, the greens are as good as they've been all year today, and they were as quick as I'd played on them.
Yep.
But you better go look at number 6.
And what did he respond? Did he respond? I bet he did.
No.
No, he didn't. Why would he?
No.
He sent Chad Bassett over to talk to him.
There it is. You've had some amazing moments with famous golfers. Can you tell us about some of your favorites and why?
Well, there's a lot of really good guys out there. There are a few of the other kind.
Huh. Are there?
But very few.
Who knew?
No one was nicer than Mark O'Meara, for example.
Yeah.
Curtis Strange and I became very good friends. Curtis Strange started off a bad guy. Yeah. Does a lot of bad language. And Arnold went to him one year at Bay Hill and says, Curtis, you were out there today with a lot of bad language, and I had a lady walking with you for the statistical part.
Yeah.
Quit it.
Yeah.
And he did.
Yeah.
Sometimes those guys just need a little.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And but
if Arnold Palmer told me to quit it.
Whatever it was.
Sure.
Yeah.
Whatever you want, Arnie.
We'll do.
Whatever you do.
Well.
You were part of the Tiger massiveness. I mean, it just kind of hit me that.
Yeah.
I mean that his entire that 2000 and 2005 run. You were right there, and we don't, you know, Tiger. You can't not talk about Tiger. It doesn't matter where you're at on the spectrum of liking him or not. I mean, he is today's Arnie, today's Jack. He's Tiger. What was that like? And that experience of the U.S. Opens that he was a part of. Where, when the fans and all of that, I mean, how did he really change golf, in your opinion, through that period?
Well, I met Tiger when he was 12 years old. He played in our USJ Junior out in San Francisco, and he made it to the Final Four. And he did lose in the semifinals, but he was right there. You could see him coming, you know, 12 years old.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then he goes ahead and wins our junior a couple of times. He wins the U.S. Amateur a couple of times. I don't know why he never won this AAU award that they get for the best athlete. Because Tiger at one point had won everything in golf, amateur, the Open. But he, I'm more proud of how he matured once he got out there. And always. Tiger's always been a fast player. One year at the NCAA, I had to time his group, and they finally got – I went – you know, they were out of position, so I said, sorry, boys, you're going on the clock. So I time them, and two holes later, they're back in position.
Yeah.
And Tiger says, whew, next time I'm going to bring some track shoes.
Well, Tom Meeks is the guest here, retired USGA Director of Rules and Competition. Tom, your career is amazing. We can't thank you enough for being here on the Stick and Hack Show. We could talk to you for hours and hours, and I'm sure you've got more stories than most have in the golf space. You've been with, played with, been around some of the greats of the game, LPGA and PGA. as well as the U.S. amateurs. You've seen people start their early golf careers at a young age, and you can see that excitement and that wonderment and that concern. And then to see them hit the tour has got to be just an incredible moment for you. But yeah, so thank you very much for being on the show here. Tom Meeks, retired USGA Director of Rules and Competition.
Yeah. Thanks, Tom.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Yeah. All right. So I will ask you. We're gonna play a game called In or Out, and this is for our foursome. So you, Mike, and I are gonna play golf, and we need to see if these people are gonna be in or out of our foursome. Okay.
Is John Wayne's on there?
John Wayne. No, John Wayne and Abe Lincoln are not on here. But we do have a pretty good guest list. So this list is movie characters. Okay. So movie characters, and if you don't know them, that's fine. Just give me that look, and I'll explain who they are. Okay. All right. So in or out of our foursome, Mike? We're going to go to you first, and then we're going to go to Tom, and then I'll answer. Okay. In or out of our foursome, Norman Bates?
Out.
Out.
Yeah.
In. Yeah, that'd be fun.
Is that the Norman
creepy.
Bates?
He's less creepy than like some
Psycho.
People we play with.
He's the one from Psycho. Yes. Oh, yeah.
He's out.
Out, I mean. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, maybe you're right. He's out.
Yeah, he's way out.
He's not a good person now that I think about it.
No. Also really creepy. And
All right, Ethan Hunt.
Is that the Mission Impossible guy? Mm-hmm. Yeah. In.
Ethan Hunt.
I don't know Mr. Hunt.
So Mission Impossible. So it's Tom Cruise. He played played Ethan Hunt.
In.
He's like James Bond.
Yeah, basically. It's like MacGyver.
Oh, definitely in with Sean Connery.
Yeah, there
well,
we
that's
go.
Where that's
the, he's the, not on there.
No, James Bond's not on the
it's
list.
It's fine. He's in. I mean, James Bond would be in too.
All right, Bane from Batman.
Batman?
Yeah.
Out.
I'm a Superman guy.
Whoa, you have an actual answer for that.
Love
it. Wow.
I love that.
No, Bane's in. 100% in.
Man, I'd be scared he'd snap on me.
That might be the fun part. That's why I want him. Frank Drebin.
Who is that? Should I know who that is?
Oh.
Frank Drebin?
Frank Drebin, yeah. Yeah, of course you do.
What movie?
I love it.
Go ahead. Somebody from the crowd. Producer Shane. Frank Drebin. Oh, you're the worst, Shane.
Who? But I really don't know who he is.
All right, that's fine. Naked Gun.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. He's in.
Leslie Nielsen.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, in.
Frank Drebin. Leslie Nielsen.
In.
In. Marge Gunderson. Fargo. Know. She's the cop in Fargo.
Oh.
Yeah, you betcha.
In, yeah.
In. I did a golf tournament in Fargo, North Dakota. Fargo.
Perfect. See.
Yeah.
See, he has actual reasons for this. I love it. She's in. Harry Potter.
In.
Harry Potter?
Yeah.
Yuck. Out. No chance.
My granddaughters would kill me if I said out. Definitely in.
See?
Yeah.
Now you made me feel bad, Tom. Okay. Thank you. He's still out. Patrick Bateman.
I'm going to go. It's American Psycho, yeah. Right? Yeah. Yeah, I'm going in. Yeah. I feel like that
Norman
would be,
Bates.
That would be interesting.
Is that the litmus test, Norman Bates or Patrick Bateman?
Yeah, but I feel like Patrick Bateman would fit in better on the golf course.
Yeah, he would.
He's got that kind of like...
He does you know, have a kind of a suave.
Slick suave.
Yeah, he does.
Yes.
Patrick Bateman.
I'm going to go with Mike.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Tom.
Walter Sobchak.
Is that the guy from...
Yeah. Big Lebowski. He's John Goodman in Big Lebowski.
I'm going to go in, yeah.
In. Yeah. Walter Sobchak, yeah. Rules. Yeah. Yeah. The rules.
John Goodman?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like him.
All right. Red.
Oh, yeah. Man. How do you think he got that nickname?
Red from Shawshank Redemption?
Yeah. Yeah,
in.
I love that show.
Yeah.
Out.
See? He hasn't seen that movie.
Haven't seen it.
Still hasn't seen it.
Don't know who he is. I don't want him a part of our foursome.
Good God.
What about Tom Meeks? Is he in our foursome?
We already established that he's in.
What about Mike?
Yeah.
Out.
Yeah.
Out.
In. I'm in.
Tom Meeks, thank you so much for joining the Sick and Act program. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you, guys. Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Tom.
Show brought to you by Sick Cups. Seriously, ice cold. Go to the member perks program on sickandact.com and get discounts on Sick Cups. Today, become a member of the greatest golf club in the world without the course. Go to sickandact.com and sign up today. And, you know, Mike, I say it every week, but I think I'm probably more proud of you this week than I ever have been before.
Hey, thanks, buddy.
My God.
Appreciate that.
What a great show.
Let's go play some golf.
All right, let's go.
All right, buddy.
Stick and Act Challenge is today. You'll see some highlights of that here soon, and you'll be super impressed with Mike's golf ability and my ability to drink. You guys have a great day. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Peace out, guys.
The Stick and Hack Show is now over. Subscribe, rate, comment, and tell your friends. You are now free to go about your day.